The Breakfast Club.
Scotty Gallen, good morning.
Good morning, Andrew Mays. How
Happy
are you?
Happy start of the new financial year.
Well, that means
you done your tax?
No, I was going to say, that brings up horror. Horror ideas for me and my accountant to work through a few things.
Oh, with all your cashies?
No. I declare everything I do.
Well done. Well,
I don't actually work here if the tax office is listening. But that's okay.
It's very difficult to prove that considering you're on air.
No. The tax office are big fans of RSN. Send them all the best.
They are indeed. I'll tell you what, the tax office, everyone's fans, the tax office at the moment is on JobKeeper, so they've got a busy year ahead as well.
That's a whole different world. I actually got an A in accounting in year 12,
so
I could have been working for the tax office.
Did you ever consider, did you go to university afterwards?
No, I've never set foot in a university.
Went straight into the Herald Sun, did you?
As a copy boy, which is basically just make coffee and run errands for 12 months. And they decide whether you're a good human being and you get a cadetship.
There you go. How long was the cadetship back in the day? What did you have to learn?
3 years. Shorthand. Allegedly got 120 words a minute shorthand.
Right.
I may have fudged that test, but you had to pass that. We did police rounds, state rounds, courts. Then I got in sport and said, that's enough. This will stay. No, I was very fortunate.
With the police rounds and all that sort of stuff, you must have seen some pretty
stuff. Well, I did the midnight shift because you were the youngster, so you start at midnight till... Yeah, 7 in the morning, whatever.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, I saw my first dead body and things like that. It wasn't great.
Wow.
I was there's a great story, and I hope none of my colleagues are listening this early.
They will be.
I famously, and I can't believe I'm confessing this, when Darren Mullane died that night, tragically on King's Road or King's Way, sorry, you're on with a photographer. So me and the photographer were out at a school fire. It was during school holiday. So massive school on fire. So that's great pictures. We're like, we'll go out here. And you hear on the scanner, you listen to the scanners, there's been a fatal in the city. And there's a lot of car accidents. Yeah. Oh, yeah. So we didn't get back in time to see what had happened there. And then my boss comes in at 6 or whatever his shift started. He rushes in. You're a bit keen. He goes... Kingsway, you've been... What? He'd already got a tip-off. I thought my journalistic career was ending.
That was
it. So we missed Darren Mullane's tragedy on Kingsway.
Yeah, right.
And it was my job that night to be all across it.
Yeah, interesting.
Yeah.
So what did you have to do? Listen to the police radio?
Yeah, police scanners on the whole time, yeah. So when there's something on, you got to get... and you hear all the chatter, and you learn the lingo. And away you go.
You good at all that Foxtrot Alpha?
Yeah. You chase stuff. Chase ambulances. You got to get there on the scene.
Bit different now. You get emailed a press release or media release, and half the time you don't even have to turn up.
Yeah, no, now different world. But that was back in the good old days.
And even more different now with Zoom.
You probably just click on.
Just stay at home.
Yeah, no.
Which is good news after we're in lockdown. Well, some of us are in lockdown.
Well, Rammer. Surely we haven't. We've seen the last of Rammer.
No.
Oh, he's on the edge.
He is marooned.
Really?
On an island in the middle of all of the outbreaks. He did discuss, remember, the other morning building a wall. I fear he might have done that because there's been no outbreaks or it's not a hotspot deemed where he lives. But every single surrounding suburb is. So we will see him on Friday, which is good news for everyone. But I do fear for his, in the coming months, where if this does spread, he's stuffed.
Hopefully. I mean, those postcards, the harsh restrictions work. Because, I mean, the first lot of restrictions worked and we were on a good thing. But this is very challenging for all fronts, including AFL, obviously.
One thing I learnt yesterday, now, I knew postcodes would cover one or two sort of, they're called towns, basically.
Yeah.
Suburbs. I didn't realise in about 10, 15 postcodes, you'd have 30 suburbs. 30 or 40 suburbs.
It's pretty big areas.
Oh, I know. But I didn't realise the postcode covered the whole area.
But I like how there's little white gaps in between them.
Yeah.
How does that work?
No, I don't know. I don't know.
So the virus goes on hold for a train trip for a couple of blocks and then starts again.
Well, it must. It must be where these family gatherings have been. Well, big family gatherings.
I think the moral of today's sport news is maybe you don't get in an Uber.
No doubt about that.
Uber's catching AFL footballers doing... I mean, they're doing the wrong thing, which yes. they're going to get, like, steel side bottom. Oh, I don't think we'll be playing this week, wouldn't have thought.
No, no.
But the Uber seems to be the setback in all these little adventures they
yes,
do.
Yes, yes.
The Melbourne kids, they were off to a little party.
That's right.
Uber, gone.
Have you, are you an Uber man or are you still a taxi
Never.
Man?
Or? I'm a traditionalist. Oh, you'd be shocked man. To know that. Yeah, I haven't figured out the Uber account. Credit card. Well, I think you got to have an active credit card. That yes. was the first issue. So
you haven't got an active credit card.
No, I got rid of all my credit cards.
Did you?
Yeah, no,
it's
amazing.
Very
effort.
Disciplined.
Yeah, well, I sold my house, so that helped. But
did Mrs. Gullen go, "Hey, rein in your spending"?
Oh, I don't think she's not innocent in this conversation. No. So I'm the only person probably in Australia that's a taxi person.
Yeah.
You'd Uber all over the place.
Oh, I've got different ride sharing apps.
Oh, is there another one?
Oh yeah, there's Uber. There's Ola.
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 What do they offer that Uber doesn't?
Oh, sometimes different rates. You can get cheaper. And the other one is Didi.
Well, my advice is not to travel by these.
No.
Carriages if you're in the AFL industry.
It's very good advice. In case you're just waking up and you went to sleep about 7 o'clock last night, bad news for Collingwood. It looks like Steel Sidebottom will be missing this week. The investigation is still ongoing, of course, Scotty, but Collingwood did release the following statement saying that Collingwood can confirm players Steel Sidebottom and Lyndon Dunn are under investigation for breaches of the AFL's return to play protocols. Sidebottom and Dunn shared an Uber on Saturday evening, and Sidebottom later visited a member of staff who is not living under the game's protocols. The breaches were reported to the AFL on Sunday afternoon. The players were interviewed by the AFL yesterday.
So visiting teammates, I didn't realise that was an issue.
I didn't either.
Because I thought if they're under the same protocol,
that's what I thought.
It's
yeah.
game
but
on.
But it was for over 2 hours. So it must be a
so
time.
So the virus ticks in at 2 hours and 1 minute?
Yep. You've got to set the alarm on your phone for
and you probably have to use
59.
Your own car to drive there. I'm just...
Yes, yes.
And then they went to Daniel Wells' house, who works in the recruiting department but hasn't been under the strict guidelines.
Not in the bubble.
So then you start to stray into, yeah, you're being a bit silly.
I get that one. I get that
and
one.
My understanding is he was a bit thirsty.
Yes.
Hence the Uber and other...
Yes,
issues.
A couple of Luke beverages.
No, I think he'll be resting. I mean, if, you know, 1 week, have a rest. Well, don't be silly.
When yesterday we were going into chaos at about 10 a.m. when the South Australian Premier in his fluoro vest yesterday made the announcement that the borders were going to...
Why was he wearing a vest?
Oh, he's doing one of those, you know, those promo things.
Does that protect
do?
You from the virus?
No, he was in the in some warehouse or something. You know, the pollies love that, don't they?
Get
the hard hat on.
Yeah, no, nothing better.
Get the fluoro vest on. It's either that or kissing babies. Anyway, South Australian Premier yesterday, 10 a.m, bang, borders shut to Victorians. They are not reopening on the 20th of July. So that was a setback. And then, of course, that came off the back of the Queensland announcement the day before, which threw the fixture into chaos. And I posed this question to you yesterday, and I asked our listeners as well. I'll ask you again today.
Did I have homework? Yeah, keep going.
No, you didn't have homework. It was just, I wonder if some people at home...
Oh, you want to call it off?
No, not call it off. I just wonder whether the interest levels, because there's going to be so much adjustment and change and dynamic fixturing, another buzzword for you, Scotty. I just wonder if people are going to lose interest a bit in the season.
Oh, it's a TV product and they need things to watch. So
they do, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Whether they're as committed as they are previously,
yeah,
that's probably a good call. I'd suspect not. I think we're all a bit, the standard's a bit iffy. Because there's no crowds, I think it's a fair bit, there's a reaction to that.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree, but I think they'll still watch. I honestly do. Cause
there's nothing else to do.
Yeah, and in our Rammer postcodes, they can't leave the house, so they're definitely going to watch.
No.
So, look, it's a TV product, and I keep saying, the asterisk season, funny stuff's going to happen, and you'd think a lot of Victorian teams are getting on planes for about a month in the next few days, or after this round. It'll be off you go, boys. Good luck.
Yep. Yep.
Which, I mean, I've got no problem with it.
No, I actually...
There'll be some players, as Trent Cotchin, I get that, who, like, a pending birth, a sickness, I get that.
Yeah.
I don't understand. Oh, I've got a couple of young kids who are, you know, and the wife needs me to help. This is your job.
Yeah.
I think you can find a way around that.
And it's very well paid.
As long as you've got family support close by, but I think the players need to just understand this is one out of the blocks. You're not going to be asked to do this again.
Yeah.
It's or unusual circumstances.
Or will they?
No.
When's it going to end?
No. It's just a little second wave. We'll ride it out. And
what about a third wave and a fourth wave? What happens next year?
When you compare our numbers to the rest of the world, like these, this is nothing. And it's 70 cases, but thankfully, touch wood, the deaths are...
Yeah.
When was the last death? So, yes, it's spreading, but we seem to have it. The panic of no hospital bed, none of that's happened.
No.
It's just the numbers are more than they were. That's why it's sort of... I get why we've got to try and rein in, but it's not catastrophic. It's nowhere near... compared to the rest of the world.
Yesterday, when you checked the numbers, or when they officially came out at about 3 o'clock, took forever for the numbers to be released.
Like waiting for the numbers now.
It's like waiting for the lotto numbers. They came out, I think, was it 64 cases yesterday?
Was it cheering because they were down?
Well, they were down.
So.
It's like when you the Australian batting collapse, and you wake up in the morning and you're thinking it's the Ashes from overnight. Yeah. You're going, what are we? You know, 4 for 80 at stumps after going in the last session and a half, and we're 1 for 60. And you're going, not bad. Not bad. And that's what I felt like yesterday when the numbers came out being lower, because we were bracing ourselves for triple figures almost, the way we were being conditioned. But it was a good thing. Obviously, there's some extreme measures with all the postcode lockdowns, but I didn't think that was too bad a result. Hopefully, that can continue to go down, because we were being conditioned to think that it was going to keep rising for weeks and weeks.
Oh, yeah, no, they've conditioned us for the worst a lot through this, which I understand. Mm. But I did a little thing in my column about Geelong 2 weeks ago. Like, we got Selwood and Ablett.
Yep.
This Saturday. 2 weeks ago, if you remember, Scott Morrison came out after his Sunday cabinet meeting and said, medium-sized stadiums, game on, you can have a quarter full. So Geelong's like, we can get 8,000 people here in July. They were starting to get rooms ready, which members we get in. They even got little bobbleheads done for Selwood and Ablett. This is great. 2 weeks later, there'll be no one there. Unlikely to be family there.
Yeah.
And they'll have a video message on the screen. That's it, boys.
Yes.
Enjoy your milestone.
A little different.
That is all you're getting.
Yeah. It is a shame. It is a shame from that point of view, but necessary protocols in place. Give us a call this morning, 1300 652 927. How are your interest levels in the AFL season? Are you following it every day, or are you just going, right, Thursday, I'm into the footy this weekend, let's just concentrate on that. Dennis from Oakley has given us a call. Good morning, Dennis.
That's you, Andrew, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, good morning, Scott. Boys, I think we should wrap the season up. We're kidding ourselves. It won't be able to be completed. One more burst of coronavirus somewhere will upend the season completely. What we should be thinking about is what we do in the future now. My feeling is we should try and combine seasons 20 and 21 together. That is, we should give ourselves 2 or 3 months off for the state government to try and get a firm footing for us to stand on, and then run a season starting in October through till August of next year, where we play a full 34 rounds, but we give ourselves time and space to try and sort the place properly, that we don't have a saga and a drama on a regular basis. We don't even know if we can have teams in. If we have a final series this year and we have an outbreak of the virus, what happens?
What do you think, Scotty? 34-round season?
That would be...
That'd be long.
Then we could finally put to bed the debate about the even playing field. Unfortunately, I mean, I think, you know, the broadcasters have a fair say. They're the ones who have stumped up all the money to prop the competition up.
Yep.
They need things to watch. Clubs. Yeah, I think I'm going to go with all our buzzwords. Agile. Like Gil has said, if we're playing on December 31, the grand final, I'm happy to do that. And that's becoming more and more forget the, what was it, Cox Plate weekend. I think that's already looking shaky.
Yes.
So he's on record saying whatever it takes. So I don't think he's going to change from that.
Yep, absolutely. Just a few SMSs that have come through this morning. Why are the AFL continuing with this out-of-whack season? Surely it's been compromised enough and it will only get worse as players seem to be opting out of hubs. Barking Mad. I don't know if that's his nickname or he thinks the AFL are barking mad. Another couple of SMSs along that same vein of thought as well, and not a lot of support, it's fair to say, for Dennis off the SMS and his 34-round season. I think it may just be a little too long. Imagine playing in a 42-degree day in Perth in the middle of summer.
That would be interesting.
Wouldn't be ideal. It'd be a lot of night footy.
34. Yeah. What if someone's 33-1?
Not sure cricket would love it either. Bit of an overlap with the season. Plenty of other people staying at home. One of those will be Adam Collins, but his home is in the UK, and our cricket correspondent joins us on the Breakfast Club this morning. Collo, good morning.
Hello, Maisie. Hi, Scotty. I was going to say it was Watford. That was the last weekend of normality before all hell broke loose over here. I was watching Dulwich Hamlet win, and thankfully we stayed up. We would have been right in the hitting zone to go down if not for coronavirus, which is hardly cold comfort in this situation. But yes, Watford did beat Liverpool.
Yes, yes. So a few celebrations for Liverpool over there as well, causing a few concerns.
Yeah. I mean, in much the same way that let's broad brush it. The rules have been flouted almost everywhere, and we're seeing the knock-on effects, not least over here since we had the Dominic Cummings saga a few weeks ago. I think the public switched off and they're paying the consequences now. So we've seen Leicester has been shut down yesterday, and it's horrible. So at least we'll have some cricket next week because they've been quite savvy about the way they've been able to implement the biosecure areas. The old biodome Paulie Shaw movie comes to mind with that. But they have been able to engineer a scenario where the West Indies players are in the biodome, the Pakistan players as well, that they're practicing today, and they'll be able to play 6 test matches in 7 weeks, would you believe, is going to happen very quickly.
Yeah, it's going to be a very busy summer. Tell us about some of those measures as well, and how publicised have they been? Because obviously every sport wants to sell itself as the safest in the world, and it's a difficult challenge for cricket being such an international sport. What's happened with the West Indies and Pakistan since they've arrived?
They've had a pretty good crack testing them. Feels like we're getting a press release talking about updated coronavirus tests every couple of hours. They are all over the private testing. So that's the first thing, I suppose, that they're managing what they can manage as far as the information flow is concerned. They have been quarantined. They've done their 2 weeks before they went outside and started practicing. So all of those boxes that one needs to tick to validate, I guess, their healthiness is being done or all being undertaken before they even get to the stage where they're playing. So for the West Indies, I mean, fair play to them. They're coming all the way here, one of the, well, I think per capita, the most dangerous country in Europe right now as far as COVID-19 is concerned. They're not getting any money for this. They're coming out here in the ECB. So we know the balance of power in international cricket has been severely tilted in the favour of Australia, England and India over the last generation, and they've taken advantage of that over time, administrators from those countries in different ways. But it's the West Indies and Pakistan who are putting themselves in some danger by coming over here, you'd have to agree. So fair play to them, and I suppose you'd hope that favours will be returned in due course in some way.
Do you think that'll be rewarded from around the world once some of the other competitions get going in terms of 2020 leagues and all that sort of stuff? Do you think those competitions will look favourably, or this will just all be forgotten?
No, I think they will be. I think that it's like an understanding that it's a rising tide situation with cricket at the moment. That is to say, if we can start playing regular bilateral series, albeit under very controlled conditions, and obviously no slider on the ball and the other ICC recommendations that are being implemented at the moment for this series inside the context of the World Test Championship, which of course is overseen by the ICC. So it's in a relatively strict set of parameters at the moment they're playing. And if that all goes off without a hitch, touch wood, famous last words, etc., but so long as it works and we come out the other end of the English summer, I think that there is a sense that the goodwill is going to need to be deprecated over time. As you say, whether it's T20 leagues, I mean, look, the fact that India have never permitted their players to come to the Big Bash, for example, and the fact that there's been a lack of movement between subcontinental countries and like little things like that, which sometimes stick in the craw. I wonder whether now there'll be sort of a broader appreciation that we're all in this together, and now we can't sort of afford to worry too much about, you know, short-term financial gain. It's about the long-term financial sustainability of the game.
Now, Benny Stokes, redemption. This is the final little chapter of it. Is it... we were expecting this. I mean, Joe Root's obviously having a child, but the Stokes as captain, how does that sit over there?
Yeah, it's fascinating, Scotty. I mean, redemption is one word for it. I mean, I suppose another way of conceiving it is that no one really ever expected Ben Stokes to be captain of anything, let alone, at least Ben Stokes, truthfully. I mean, he's only captain. I was reading a fascinating piece today by a colleague of mine. He's only captained 3 games of cricket since he was 15 years old in any team, any team anywhere. So that reflects, I think, the fact that he's always been a sort of on-field leader. He's never needed the armband to behave in that way and to be seen as someone who could inspire his colleagues. And we saw that as recently as January when England won in South Africa. It was largely due to Ben Stokes being a leader on-field and sort of didn't need the recognition as captain. But it is interesting that Stokes, as you say, like that horrible situation that he got himself into, and I stress got himself into, in Bristol in September 2017. I mean, I suppose it's a reminder to all of us that occasionally in life there is a way back, and Stokes has found a way back. And on the field, obviously, his exploits in 2019 earned him what's known over here as the Sports Personality of the Year Award from the BBC, which is a pretty big deal. There'd been no cricketer that won that since 2005. So I suppose, you know, as it is a lot of the time with sports people, if they're able to perform, they're often forgiven, whether that's right or wrong. It seemed to be that he did his time as far as missing 6 months of cricket at the back end of 2017 and the start of 2018. Obviously, he was found not guilty by the courts in August 2018, and now a couple of years on from that, he's been given the chance to captain a test. Don't expect it to be a long-term thing, though. I don't think anyone in England cricket think that Ben Stokes is the right guy to be the captain of the test team, because... I mean, there's not because of his character, purely because he's an all-rounder. And we know that being an all-rounder and being captain rarely works well. See the evidence of Ian Botham and see the evidence of Drew Flintoff. Both of their captaincy careers were terrible as England captains. So I think that they'll be reticent to do it on a long-term basis. But for a one-off, I guess, because he's vice-captain, he's afforded that privilege.
Who are the possible candidates for Joe Root's replacement, say, in 12, 18 months or whenever that happens?
Well, I mean, it may not be 12 or 18 months. That's assuming that Root weren't to do it long-term. Root's not an old man in cricketing terms. There's no reason why he couldn't do it for a few years. I mean, usually England captains go for about 4 or 5 years. That tends to be the orthodoxy in recent times. But I guess the man most likely is Rory Burns, because he's been a fantastic skipper at Surrey. He's not yet 30, I don't believe. He's won the championship a couple of years ago. He's an established player in England team now as the opening bat. So in the event that Root did want to hand it over, or indeed if he was replaced, there was some talk late last year that due to the fact that his batting average is about 10 runs less when he's skipper compared to when he's not skipper, and they may want to have Root the batsman more than Root the skipper, I think Rory Burns would be an option they look at closely there. Or indeed they might, and this is probably a bit of a long shot given he's not the most established player in the side, but also Josh Butler, who is being made Stokes' vice-captain this week, that they've often turned to Butler to captain the limited overside when Owen Morgan's been taking a breather. So he'd be an outside pick, but I think the most likely scenario is that Root will do it for a long time.
It is time for the Bataki 3-question quiz, not 7. We're not here for half an hour, not 1. We need a bit more detail than that. Scotty Gullen, you kicked me off the hosting duties yesterday. I have handed it over to you today.
You had one good question, and we need 3 good ones.
1-300-652-927, a mini easy cup of Tocky ham up for grabs. Gold Aussie bacon, pepperoni and pastrami. Thanks to Bataki Small Goods, simply the best. Check out all the delicious Bataki Small Goods, handcrafted from the finest Australian ingredients to bring you that authentic Bataki flavour. 1-300-652-927. Now, Scotland, how much homework did you do on these questions?
That was significant.
Significant. Significant.
2 AFL questions and 1 NRL question.
Right.
Which came to me in a stroke of genius.
Right, okay.
And one of them's related to our guest from yesterday, one of our guests.
Oh, newsy.
Yeah, no, he was in my head, so it was, you know, I'm very happy with them.
Ronnie,
very happy with
1-300-652-927. Don't forget, there's only three questions in this quiz, so you've got to get on early, and they will be a little harder than my questions yesterday, but we'll see how we go.
Now, we've got the early mail coming up, but yes. I need to discuss something with you.
Oh.
In my head, if we had the trainer on and a horse he trains wins...
Yellow card.
I think we got the money.
He didn't recommend it, though. It's a yellow card.
So does this become a warning system? So Matt Kamani had two runners.
Yes.
When pushed, he went for the wrong one.
It's a yellow card.
Who was unplaced. And
I'm
the other
sorry.
One
won. I'm sorry. It's a yellow card.
I love Matt. I'm trying to be kind.
He is the nicest person in racing. 1-300-652-927. Okay. Damien is on the road. Damien, good morning.
Good morning, boys. How are we this morning? I'm a first-time caller to your show, boys.
Oh, well, it's not a new show. We're just sitting in for the moment. Damien, you'll be off knowing your previous record as soon as we have you on. Fire away, Scotty.
All right, Damien. Who replaced Rodney Eade before the end of the 2017 season when he departed the Gold Coast Suns? Negative.
No.
For three games, this gentleman was coach of an AFL team.
1-300-652-927. See, already the standard of questions. You've intimidated people.
This could go till, when are we off air? 8:30.
Yeah, this could actually turn into one of Whitey's quizzes and go for 19 hours. 1-300-652-927, the three-question super quiz from Scotty Gallen. Don't forget, later on the show today, we are catching up with Sherelle McMahon, Charlie Gardner from the Swans, Max Purcell, Australian tennis player, and Isaac Smith, the Hawthorn wingman. Scotty McLaughlin will also join us as well. Scotland, you are struggling here big time. I don't think they like it.
No, it's too hard.
It is too hard.
Well, that's okay. We'll get there before...
This is the easiest Pataki you'll win with a bit of brain power. 1-300-652-927. Lines are jammed. Joey's having some problems out the back. Jack in queue. Good morning.
Hi, boys. How you going?
Very well.
Now, Jack, who replaced Rocket Eade when he got the heave-ho at the end of 2017 with three games to go?
I think it was Dean Solomon.
Oh, well here done. We go. Jack, who was the leading vote-getter in the 2019 Brownlow who was not a midfielder?
Who was not a midfielder?
Not a midfielder here, Scotty. So what, defender for...
Oh, I don't have to spell it out for Jack.
Okay.
Ben Brown,
that name. Oh, Jack. I thought I had you there. Shannon from Reservoir. Morning.
Morning, boys. Was it Brody Grundy?
Yes. Tied for fifth. Well played. Okay, this is for the Pataki. Who did the Sydney Roosters defeat in last year's NRL Grand Final?
Ooh. Oh, that was the Canberra Raiders.
Oh. Too easy. Make them harder tomorrow, please, Scotland.
No, I thought it's a trick one, the NRL one, because if it's not the Storm, you sort of just forget.
Yeah, true, true.
I mean, you're a rugger person. And
no, rugby, not so much the NRL rugby.
No, that's it. Well done,
I might not have a sport to follow the way rugby's going at the moment. Well done to Shannon in Reservoir. He wins the Pataki, a mini easy cut ham for this morning. Cook that up on the weekend. Nice in winter, Scotty. Big roast dinner on a Sunday afternoon footy.
No,
sensational.
No, I'm happy with that.
Going to have more time to stay at home as well, so may as well get cooking. We will hold an investigation into that quiz afterwards as well, after the show, because I just think they need to be a little harder, Scotland. We need more people.
Yeah, that's all right. That was
better. We had four people on the line waiting to go and been knocked off in two callers. You said mine wasn't hard enough yesterday. Well, today, you've had the same amount of callers.
If you want me
difficulty
to turn
level
the screws.
Up to nine tomorrow, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
I can
very
turn
much.
The screws on that.
Thank you very much. Sherelle McMahon joins us on the line. Sherelle, good morning.
Good morning, guys. Sorry about that. Just some IT issues. It's the world we live in, isn't it, at the moment? Every other time I have spoken to you guys, it's been totally fine. So I'm crossing my fingers you can hear me, and it's not too bad.
Oh,
good.
We've got you
good.
Loud and clear, as if you're sitting right next to us. It does look very funny, though, because it looks like you're totally ignoring us on your Zoom call here. So just to paint the picture for everyone at home, Sherelle is on her phone talking to us while on camera. So it looks like she's taken a call from a friend and said, sorry, guys.
Yeah, guys, I'm busy right now. Can you stop bothering me? Because I've got other stuff on, all right? I'm a really busy person at the moment.
Have you enjoyed the return of the footy over the last couple of weeks? There's been a lot of talk about state of the game. As a footy lover and a footy watcher, have you been a bit disinterested? How have you found it?
To be honest, I have, and it's disappointing. I'm actually disappointed in my disinterest and probably a little bit surprised because I do always love the AFL season coming around, but it's just such weird times, isn't it? It's so bizarre. Although I do have to say that I kind of think now, like, my team, the Blue Boys, are the Blues now a team that win close games? Is that what we are now?
Yeah, absolutely.
Because that's pretty exciting.
Well, their last three games, they lost by a point, one by two, and then one by one. So
yeah, that's impressive.
It did remind me of the 1999 prelim, which I reminded Adam Ramanaskis about on Monday morning.
Bit of a stretch, time. Andrew, I'd suggest.
It was very similar. Two high-caliber teams going at it.
Exactly.
Are they any good this year, you think, the Blues, Sherelle?
Well, it's so hard to tell at the moment, isn't it? I mean, teams are coping so differently with different situations and it's swinging around so much. I think if they're winning those tight games, although perhaps the quality isn't as high as what you might like, winning those close games as opposed to not certainly signals a bit of a shift from the last couple of years. So that's a positive thing for them. And, you know, I think I was talking last week about my favourite player probably of all time, Eddie Betts, even when he was playing with Adelaide. I wasn't 100% sure about his introduction into the group, but I think, you know, he continues to just prove that he has, you know, some really good worth there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there's a lot to like about what they've been doing. But, yeah, a kind of a general lift of standard would also be really nice to see as one of their fans.
Now, plenty of chat today. We'll get on to netball shortly because the big news broke
about
2 hours after you were off air last week. So we haven't had a chat to you to about this. But before we get to netball, I wanted to ask you about the hub situation. You've been an elite athlete, one of Australia's best ever, with children. How would you feel about packing up and leaving your kids for a period of 6, 8, 10 weeks to earn a living, essentially, playing professional sport?
Yeah, it would be really tough. And I mean, I've had periods of time since I've had my kids where I've gone into a tournament kind of situation. I've been up at the Commonwealth Games and a few other things, but that's only been for a much shorter period of time. And that was really tough to be away from them even for that short period. So I do know in netball, the hub situation was certainly a big consideration when they were going through trying to find the start date for our season and what that might look like, which was now, I think, about 4 weeks ago that announcement was made, or 3 weeks ago. So the hub situation was on the table then, and it's certainly something they're considering, even in a short term, given our current situation. It would be really tough. I don't quite know how that would work, and I know there's different types of hubs and whether it's a hub where you go in and you are not allowed to leave and you are not allowed to go back in, or there's a bit of flexibility on that. I'm not sure on whether different sports would approach that differently, but it would be a really, really tough situation for families to be in, that's for sure.
Now, Sherelle, your sport. You,
yes.
Were you caught by surprise like the rest of the world when suddenly, out of nowhere, Netball Australia said 2-point bombs are in?
Yes, I was. Blindsided is probably the good way to describe it, like the rest of the netballing world. And you're right, Maisie, it was only a couple of hours after I was on air with you last week, and I thought, oh, that's probably not a great look that I didn't mention it to you guys. But then when it came out that, in fact, the SSN Commission had made this decision effectively stand alone, you know, I didn't feel as bad. And it's an interesting one. You know, there's been a lot of talk about not only what the rule is, but the way this decision was made and the lack of consultation between some of the, well, all of the major stakeholders, basically. And, you know, for a long time, athletes have fought to have a seat at the table and a voice when these major decisions are being made. And this is a major one for netball. This is a huge one. So I think that some of those stakeholders are right in having some angst around the way the decision was made. And obviously, and I know you guys have spoken to Caitlin Thwaites last week too around how some of those players are feeling. But then we get onto the actual rule. What do you Correct. Guys think? Do you think that the 2-point shot is a good thing, or what are you guys thinking initially?
So,
well, you go first.
Oh, for those who don't know, so it's the last 5 minutes of each quarter.
Stupid.
There's a special zone in the circle where you've got to present yourself and make the shot. Now, well, it's been used in Fast Five, which was gimmicky, and it was good in that format, wasn't it, Sherelle? So did you think it was always going to progress, or...?
Well, this is the thing. There's been a lot of talk about it for a long time. You know, people have always, well, when I say people, probably quite a small amount of people have often spoken about this being a possibility. And one of the realities in netball is that it's incredibly fast-paced. It's really physical for those who have been to see it live. And then we get to the point of scoring. And there is a bit of a lull with the scoring as the shooter lines up and takes it. So, you know, there is some thought around how we might make that a little bit more exciting, that end point and that scoring point. So I'm not surprised in that some of the people in charge are really trying to kind of explore that and that they have finally pulled the trigger on it, because it's been spoken about for a long time.
Yeah, I don't disagree with netball trying something a little bit different. The way it's been implemented is obviously a bit of a concern, having lack of consultation with everyone. But the other point that I don't get is the 5 minutes. Like, it's only the last 5 minutes, which to me just seems stupid. If you're going to actually go with the rule, go with it for the entire game.
Yeah, and that will be interesting too, to see how everyone adjusts to that, because effectively you're playing netball as you would normally for the first 10 minutes of a quarter and then trying to adjust to this new scoring system. The other thing, I guess, you know, from a coaching perspective, we're working with the Vixens, and I walked in the next day to our training session and we'd already marked out the shooting zone on the court. But the reality is this has happened just less than 6 weeks before the start of a season. And layer that with the fact that we've already got a pretty significant rule change in rolling subs, which means that we don't need to make a substitution at a break. Now we can do that at any time during play. Layer that also with the fact that at the moment, with the restrictions and the limited numbers we're allowed to have at training, match play is actually quite tricky. It's hard to have the numbers to get a proper match underway and play under those match conditions. So the SSN are saying this is a trial, which is fine, but I would have thought that it's maybe not the best environment to try and do a trial, because, you know, in 4 weeks' time now when we hit the court, there's really going to be a limited time that we've been able to spend in that match situation trialing this and finding the right way to play it. So come August 1st, when we do actually hit the court, I don't know whether the showcase that we would want this massive rule change to be will be there. Having said that, It is what it is. And again, we walked into the courts and we now need to change our mind to actually putting this out and giving it a crack. And that is absolutely what we'll do. And we will make the best of it.
Time to check in with John Quinn from Quinn Elite Sports. Now, this is something I have been enjoying listening to from home after the last 3 months. And now I'm keen to ask John some questions myself. Quinny, good morning.
Andrew, morning. How are you going?
I'm going well, and I did get an email from my gym saying that a couple of weeks ago, saying that the spin classes that I used to attend are now back up and running, which is good news for everyone. But today, Quinny, we want to talk about riding and running on different surfaces and what effect that can have. Now, tell me, why is it so hard going from a spin class where I feel like I'm about to die afterwards to then riding on the road?
All to do with the size of the bike, gearing, your position on it, angles of the joints, all of those things, wind resistance even. They all play a big role in terms of a view. And we're pretty sensitive, I guess, in terms of how we train. That's what we then get when we go out and play the game or do the activity. That's one of the problems that footballers have when they have a pre-season. They've all trained really hard, but then when they get in the game, they're not quite ready. It usually takes three or four goes. So the spin class that you've been doing has been getting you fit, so your fitness is up, but the specific conditioning for you going out and doing a road bike session or whatever, that's not going to be there. You're going to have to spend a few sessions getting your body in nick for that activity.
Now, Quinny, my spin sessions, I sweat a lot. And sometimes the road, you know, you travel around, it doesn't feel like you sweat as much, Quinny. What's the difference there?
That's a very big concept called evaporation, I reckon. When you're outdoors, you know, it's just evaporating. Indoors, it's, you know, it's just a different temperature. Go cycling on a hot day, a humid day, you'll be sweating just as much, Scotty. I reckon you're fine.
I get very wet.
Struggle with that concept?
The way to test that, and in all seriousness, because hydration is a big thing for performance, not just in terms of what you're doing in sport, but also your day-to-day activity and your ability to do your job as well. Weigh yourself. So weigh yourself before you start the session and then weigh yourself at the end of it. For every litre that you have lost, or every kilogram that you have lost, you drink 1.5 litres to replace it because you get what we call a metabolic burn. So you keep using up your fluid. But, hydration is one of the really simple ways to maintain performance. And, just weigh yourself at the start. And I think you'd find if you're doing a spin class indoors, you think, gee, I'm sweating a lot, you'd be sweating just as much outdoors on the bike. You know, there might be a little bit of a difference just because of the ambient temperatures, but other than that, it'll be pretty much the same. So you weigh yourself and replace every kilo lost with 1.5 litres of fluid.
But the heart rate, I mean, when the instructor's yelling at you and you've got to go up and down and do all that sort of stuff, I mean, the heart rate in a spin class does have its ups and downs, which is good, I gather.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the concept of what we call high-intensity intermittent training or HIIT training, and it's pretty much all the rage now all around the world. And, look, you're just putting it into a concentrated effort. But you could do that outdoors on a bike too, and but it's just probably a little bit harder without the music and people yelling and someone going flat out beside you. But it's a very similar sort of concept. But the main thing with the bike is just it's all to do with the gearing and the environment that you're actually cycling in.
So what is better for you, Quinny, the spin class or getting out on the road?
Oh, I think, you know, it depends on what floats your boat. You know, I think a lot of people like to get outdoors and get out into the real world. Other people like to have other people around them and find that quite motivating. For me, the simple answer is do what you enjoy doing. If fitness is your goal, do that. If you want to be a champion cyclist, you won't find too many of them going off spin class to qualify for Tokyo Olympics.
No, of course.
Now, running on different surfaces is our other topic. You love coaching your athletes on the sand dunes.
I've always loved the sand dunes, and wherever I've been, I've spent some time in our early phases of the year getting my athletes on sand and running on sand, whether it was down in Tasmania or there in Victoria or certainly here in New South Wales. So actually only last weekend I've had my athletes down at the famous Wanda sand dunes down at Cronulla. But I've also, probably a month or so ago, I took them down to Palm Beach where Home and Away is filmed, and we found these sand dunes tucked down the back there and did a pretty arduous session down in there. But yeah, sand dunes have formed a part of my programs for many years now. And I like them for lots of different reasons. It's a tough session, but it's fairly forgiving on the body. There's minimal impact going on there. But the contact time on the surface is just that little bit longer that the muscles have to work in a different way. And what I'm trying to do is get strength endurance into my athletes. And that's just laying a bit of foundation for the running that's going to come in the next few months when we get back onto the track, when they finally start getting the tracks open and up and going for my guys here. The other thing that I really like about the sand is it's for stability, and particularly around the ankle joint. And in any movement, any sport where you've got change direction and even running a bend, ankle stability is paramount. So for me, the sand running is much about the ankle stability as it is about what we call ground reaction forces being decreased. So, yeah, I love the sand dunes.
Let's head up to Sydney and head across the bridge to Charlie Gardner, who is the Sydney Swans General Manager of footy, who joins us on the line. Charlie, good morning and welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're well. How are you? How's the week been up in Sydney, considering your opponent changed, I assume, very late Sunday night and early Monday morning?
Yeah, that's right. We got news pretty early on Monday that, and a heads up late on Sunday that there'd likely be a change to the fixture. I think the good thing for us is we were coming off a 9-day break anyway, so there's not too much of an impact preparation-wise. And we've had a few days to put some preparations in place to fly up to the Gold Coast on Saturday morning.
So, Charlie, potentially, if the change hadn't happened, you were going to have crowds this weekend?
Yes, we were looking at crowds at the SCG, yeah.
Wow. We long for those days now.
I know. It is quite a strange experience. Now, Charlie, tell us about the preparation, how it's had to change, because obviously I imagine for your opposition analysis and that sort of stuff, it's all squeezed into 5 days now rather than probably 4 or 5 weeks that you've been spending on playing the Ds. How does that all change?
Yeah, our opposition analysts had to pivot pretty quickly and get into the Eagles. But, you know, they all watch a lot of footy and are monitoring trends in the game. And so they've just got on and rolled their sleeves up and got into it. You know, it's obviously not ideal, but I think everyone in the industry understands the environment we're working in, and we've all just got to be adaptable as an industry and individually, all the clubs and the coaching panels. You know, we're just keeping an open mind at the moment, and I guess it is a level playing field in the sense that everyone's in the same boat. Everyone has the same lead in, and we've just got to get on and do our best.
Have you been given any indication about whether there might be a New South Wales hub coming up shortly? Because it does seem that a lot of the Victorian clubs might leave and head into state to avoid all the lockdown restriction rules that are applied when you come from Victoria.
We haven't as yet, but I understand that that's one option that's being considered with the border restrictions in the other states, that New South Wales remains open and a suitable place to for teams to play and spend time, either travelling back to Queensland or to other states. So I understand that's one option on the table, but we haven't had anything confirmed as yet.
Charlie, how's Buddy going? Is he back training, or what level is he at yet?
He's back running on a low load, bearing Alter G at the moment. So he's just getting back going. He's still got a way to go. I think he's 4 or 5 weeks into his rehab. The strength, the leg strength part of his program is really important at the moment. And so he's working through that. And it's probably a bit too early to say, what a return date looks like. We've really just got to see how he goes over the next couple of weeks.
And Tom McCartan, he missed last week with concussion. Is he a chance?
Yeah, he eased into some training this week. It's just one we've got to watch and see how he responds to the lift in intensity this week. I know he trained yesterday. We'll just have to assess him. We've got our main training session on Thursday, so we'll know more after that.
And poor old Sam Naismith, I mean, it's just makes you cry watching that. How is he, and what's the future hold for Sam?
Yeah, it was devastating for Sam. He's done a lot of work to get right after initially doing his knee back in March 2018, I think it was. He played some games at the back end of last year. He got back and played some reserves games and was looking forward to a big season. Unfortunately, the shutdown probably came at the wrong time for him. He was one player that could have used the continuity of training and being in an elite environment and just some consistent training. So that was That was unfortunate for him. He's doing well in the circumstances. He's had a fair bit going on himself in the last couple of months with the passing of his sister, which I think probably given him some perspective as well. So, we're just supporting him as much as we can and getting around him. He'll get on with his recovery. I think he's keen to do that as quickly as possible, and then look at what contribution he can make for the rest of the year to the team. But I think he's looking ahead and looking to get stuck into his recovery.
I wonder if Max Purcell, Australian tennis player, has been playing some golf to occupy his mind during the tennis shutdown. It's good news that they are back out on court, at least within Australia, and he won the UTR Pro Tennis Series event in Sydney on Tuesday. Max, good morning and welcome to the Breakfast Club.
Morning, guys. How are you doing?
We're going very well. How are you? I mean, how much of a relief was it to actually get out and play some competitive tennis again over the last few days?
Huge relief. We've all been practicing. I assume everyone's been practicing pretty hard over the last 2-3 months with this whole pandemic. But it was good to see everyone working hard and showing off what they've been training for and have this event going.
Now, last time we spoke to you, you had made the Grand Slam doubles final for the first Grand Slam of the year. Can you believe what has happened in the last 6 months or so? It's been a crazy time to be a tennis player, and especially someone like yourself who's not in the top 50 and can just support themselves as easily as those guys.
Yeah, it's been tough. Obviously, Sav and I wanted to capitalise on all the opportunities that would have come with after our result in January. And, tough to kind of see that, let that slip away a little bit right now. But I'm just going to kind of trust the ATP and the plan they have, and hopefully it won't hinder us too much. But I think I've kind of enjoyed this time being back home as tennis players. We're kind of overseas about 35, 40 weeks a year, especially from Australia, whether how far it is to travel everywhere else. So we kind of just tend to stay away. So, I've just been enjoying staying home and actually getting an extended training block in, but for sure I'm itching to get back out there.
So making the Australian Open doubles final, what doors did it open up? And have you had any correspondence as to whether that'll continue for next year as well? Or what's the situation there?
So that put Luke's and I, our ranking at a pretty good spot to get into some of the bigger events, which is it's good because it gives me more of a chance to give my singles ranking a bit of a push in these ATP Tour events rather than just staying at the challenge level. So hopefully we would have been able to put on some more results there for the doubles and push our ranking further up, and hopefully I could have got my singles ranking to the same level. But at the point with the ATP pushing this for next year, we haven't really been told anything about what our rankings or what these results are going to look like for next year. We're all kind of waiting and I guess just hearing rumours about things, but no one's been told anything for sure about what's going to happen.
So Max, what was life like in isolation? I mean, what did you get a chance to work on fitness? Were you allowed to get on your court? Have you got what was it like? What restricted you?
I came back originally from a little bit of back soreness, like a few days before all this coronavirus stuff came down. So I didn't really come back from that. But so I kind of came back, had like a week off to get my back better, and then I've been training the whole time through, like just for the most part privately with my coach for the first 2 months. We were about 5 days a week doing that. I haven't really stopped the whole time. My brother's doing a bunch of triathlon training for an event later this year in Perth, if that goes ahead. So I've been joining in all the long runs that he's been doing. I enjoy running a lot as well, so that's helped, especially being able to do it with someone, finding that motivation. If anything did get too serious, I'm lucky enough that I've got a synthetic grass court in my backyard, but it hasn't gotten to that stage yet.
That is very handy to have. did you pick up the tennis racket straight away, or did you give it a break, leave it in the bag for a month or so during the lockdown at the start? How did you approach that?
No, I kept going. I haven't stopped yet. I've had a couple of 2 day rest periods throughout this block, but otherwise I've been going basically 6-7 days a week the whole time, just trying to get an edge over the rest of the guys when we come back out, I guess.
Isaac Smith, Hawthorn vice captain, is in the inner sanctum this morning. Isaac, good morning.
I don't know if my Wednesday could get any better. No half, and I've got Maisie.
We might just record that and play that on the promo next time. It's better than Linguini arms.
Should we reveal some secrets off microphone?
I don't know what
the
secrets.
2 minutes ago, Isaac didn't know what day it was.
No, he didn't.
Was very good by you that you've added Wednesday in there.
I did think if I could add that, it would look like I know what I'm talking about.
How is the timetable going in your head at the moment? Do you know what day it is, where you're supposed to be, who you're playing?
I was seriously saying just off air, and you boys were probably listening. Scotty was probably honing right in, but
correct.
I was actually saying that I have no idea what day of the week it is. We literally just get sent a schedule and you just rock up when you got to rock up, and that's about it. Because, right, other than going to the footy club, I'm pretty much sitting at home twiddling my thumbs.
Now, it's my understanding that you're off to get a COVID test today as well. Are you dreading them? I can't think of anything, well, not many more things worse than having a pencil-type object shoved up your nose.
No, I think the first one that I got was pretty uncomfortable, but that was one of the normal drug testers that had come into the club, and I'd sort of stir him up every time he came in. So I think he thought he could get one back on me. So that was the first one I've had, but since then, they're a little bit uncomfortable, but they're not too bad at all.
Now, how's the coach? He was very grumpy on Sunday night.
No, the coach is really good. He was pretty good to the players as well. I think probably how he came across in the press conference certainly wasn't how he came across to the players after the game. So we're in a pretty good position. We're 3-1 and we can't complain. So just got to keep banking the wins and keep winning.
Was that, I mean, him and the Geelong-Melbourne game and other games, you know, the state of the games debating as usual, was that game particularly bad in the sense of scrambly for you guys out there?
As a player, I don't think you particularly see the overall picture of the game as in, you know, is it a great spectacle? Or if you're heading down those lines, I think the frustration on the night was we felt like we probably had a hell of a lot of holding the balls as players from both sides. There was a bit of chatter and we didn't feel like they were being paid, but that's the game, and I think the beauty of AFL as well is that the rules can be interpreted by the umpires different ways, and depending on the game, you go to the umpire's whistle. So, as a player, it's difficult to tell, but, we'd certainly love to see more goals, because if there's more goals in the game, more chance of kicking some.
No doubt about that. Tell us about the feeling amongst the playing group after the game as well, because, I mean, really, you controlled it for the best part of three quarters, and then the last quarter was a little dicey. But in terms of your overall performance, you must have been pretty happy with how the guys went.
Yeah, I think I was a bit upbeat, but there was a few of the boys that were pretty depressed after the game. They thought it was a bit of a close shave, as it was. North Melbourne came back well, but as you said, we felt like we controlled the game and we probably just let it slip in the last 5 or 10 minutes. But we are coming off four months of isolation, and you're seeing some interesting results at the moment. So a bit of our philosophy is if you can bank wins, then you'll put yourself in a good position in the latter half of the year.
I thought that Chad thought he'd lost the game at the end when he had the ball. He was about to spike it into the ground. He wasn't happy at all. He's playing some good footy at the moment, Chad Wingard.
No, he's playing some fantastic footy. Funny you say that, though. I got home Sunday night and my wife said to me, Chad Wingard, what's he like? She hasn't really met him because of isolation and, you know, met him a few times last year. I said, yeah, he's a really nice guy. And she said, why does he look so angry all the time?
The Chad not happy. Now, you know, with rule change, how does it feel as a player, Isaac, when you all rule changes and the old players and media commentators throw all this stuff up? I mean, I know you just got to focus on week to week, but in the bigger picture? Are you a rule change guy, or you think things just ebb and flow and they'll smooth itself out?
Oh, I think things naturally evolve. So, I'm not a huge fan of rule changes. I think the game's been, ever since I've been alive, my number one sport that I enjoy watching. So, to me, there's certainly not too many things wrong with the game. I've always been a big one for incorrect disposal should be paid, which we don't tend to pay anymore. But I've always thought that that rule, if you paid it straight away, it'd just clear the ball and clear the players pretty quickly. But, mate, other than that, I'll leave that to bigger and uglier men than me. They can fight that out in their press conferences and boardrooms, and I'll just go out and play.
I'm interested in the effect that John Kennedy Sr. had on your playing group. Obviously, you were so successful and have been so successful in your career. There was a great video that was released on the Hawthorn social media pages after his passing last week, which showed John last year coming and talking to the players at the start of the season. Just tell us about the impact he had on you as a playing group in this modern era, which, of course, was completely different to when he took over the club.
Yeah, I think we were very fortunate. We had a fair bit of connection with John, and he'd be down at training every now and then, and he'd be welcome into the club whenever he wanted. And Clarko had created a great connection with him as well. So we were fortunate enough that John had come down a few times in my career and presented to the group, but we were also able to sit down and just have one-on-one chats with him. And when we heard the news, it was obviously very upsetting, and it's a huge loss to the Hawthorn Football Club and a huge loss to the Kennedy family. But he had a huge influence on this place, and I guess the blocks that Hawthorn was really built on, they were around before him, but they weren't very successful. And ever since he took control, it's been a fantastic club.
It is so good now, the virtual racing, that it's just about the real thing. Anyway, it was good to get the real thing back on the weekend. Scotty McLaughlin did what he always does and won two out of the three races up in Sydney. He joins us on the line now, the Supercars champion. Good morning, Scotty.
Hey, guys. How are we?
Business as usual for you on the weekend. How did it feel to get back in the car?
Yeah, it was awesome to get back into it and just, get mastered it. I mean, the weekend was a little different without fans and social distancing rules and stuff that we haven't really had before. But certainly it was an awesome weekend for us, and really just I guess in some ways we just pretend it was a normal race, didn't take anything of it, and just I think that was a good way for our mindset just to adjust and get going, and we managed to grab a couple of chocolates, which was good.
What was the biggest difference you noticed as a driver for the weekend?
To be honest, without the fans and stuff, it's probably at the end of the day is when you like have a good result and you got the podium there and stuff like that. And no one can really celebrate with you. You basically get out of your car and there's a trophy on a stand and you get that and then you walk back with it. There's no celebrations, whatever. So that's probably a little bit different. Driving-wise, it was all very similar. There's no real differences, but the whole like spectacle of it all was very different.
After 4 months off, how was the body and mind after three races?
For me, I felt pretty solid going in. I did a lot of go-kart work and stuff that, away from the track to try and get prepped. And, believe it or not, we use our go-karts a lot to just keep fit and reactions and check and stuff like that. So, I used it a ton and still am, and felt really good going into like even the first lap of practice that day. I felt right at home and it worked out really good.
So, had you been in the car much? Were you allowed to be in the car before the weekend?
No, we weren't. So we only get 3 test days a year. So we haven't used any of those, and haven't been in the car since basically the March AGP when they cancelled the race on the Thursday. So, yeah.
So there's no weirdness or match fitness, like you said. That first lap is like, oh no, we're all good. It feels normal.
Oh look, it's a lot. It's kind of like riding a bike. So you know what goes on. But yeah, look, certainly it's the first couple of laps for sure. It's a little weird, and just your body getting used to the G forces again and all that sort of stuff. But once you sort of acclimatise to all that, it's just business as usual.
In terms of, I was going to ask about the body as well, because one thing, I've become obsessed with Drive to Survive, the F1 documentary, and you do realise how much of a toll it takes on the bodies a little further. And of course, we know it's probably even more so in the supercars, the way you're able to throw them round. How has the body recovered after a weekend back racing, rather than sitting in your little virtual setup at home?
Yeah. It's certainly, I was a little bit sore than normal. And to be honest, we were doing a lot more racing in a short amount of time. So 2-day format, Saturday practice and qualifying, and then a race, and then two races and qualifying, two races on Sunday. So the amount of laps we did was a lot more than we normally do. I felt like my prep was pretty good, but yeah, there's just muscles in there that you can't train. That is that match fitness. That's probably where I was sore, but I sort of went for a run on Monday morning and felt pretty good just to flush everything out and back into training the last couple of days.
The Breakfast Club, 6 till 8:30 weekdays on RSN 927.